Lions of the Southland, Sunday, March 24th, 2024. Gentlemen, we have joining us today the voice of Georgia Tech volleyball, Kurt Hoyt. Kurt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you for inviting me on this evening.
Kurt, to start off today, we have some spicy rule changes from the NCAA that we'd like you to talk through. And Jake, I know you have some thoughts written in here as well, but first, to level set, let me go through the exact rule changes as written down for us by USA Today. Number one, referees are now allowed to issue red cards to the home team in cases where spectators get too close to the playing area and the home team does nothing to resolve the issue. Number two, interference above the net is now challengeable by video review. Number three, all protests against referee decisions must now be resolved during the match in question. Number four, small snug-fitting nose rings and ear cuffs have been added to the list of acceptable jewelry that can be worn during a match. This is a very long list. I don't know why I decided to read all of these in one go. Number five, each team is now allowed to designate two liberos for each set. Only one libero would be allowed on the court at each time. And number six, players may now contact the ball more than once on any single attempt on a team's second contact, so long as the ball is played to a teammate. And the USA Today writer here notes, this is John Hoffling of the USA Today, notes very specifically that last rule change has made some players quite upset. And Kurt, I would love to ask you why.
Well, my daughter played setter, and I could tell you, countless hours in the gym of trying to make sure that you can contact the ball cleanly, because the whole idea is they want the ball to come out of the hands, that your hands have touched the ball only once. And you can get into all kinds of, being tech folks, you want to get into the physics of all of it and things
Side
like that.
spin.
You see a lot of it with the side spin. That's an indication that you might not have contacted it with both hands at the same time. And so there is this notion that if you're a setter, you have, worked on that skill for a long time to not, because you got to remember, volleyball is a rebound sport, right? So you, not all passes are going to be perfect. So the setter can't just kind of stand in their spot and wait for the ball. They're going to be moving around sometimes, running around all over the place, trying to do the best they can to deliver the ball cleanly to the hitter. The other side of it is that if you end up in a situation where the setter cannot get to the ball, maybe they were the one who passed it to start with. You had what over the years on the air, I call the you're not the setter call, which is there are referees, and it mentions this in the article, to point that if you aren't the setter, like if you're one of the middles or maybe even one of the outsides, sometimes you might give a little leeway to a right side hitter because they're supposedly the backup setter or maybe the libero on the court. But you get someone who doesn't normally touch the ball, and as soon as they touch it, the whistle blows and they're already putting up the two fingers. It's like they're anticipating, oh well, this person can't do this. And so therefore they call them for the violation, whether it was good or not, right? So I think for folks who work on that skill day and night, I take a lot of pride, right, in being very clean with their setting. Yeah, I could see where you're like, well, wait, did I do all that for nothing? I would say that no, you haven't done all that for nothing. My guess is that their research and from the reading I did, that it's probably true that if you are sending bad sets to your hitters, that there's a little bit of that that's going to take care of itself, because either it's going to be a hitting error and a point for the other team anyway, or you're going to have to bump the ball back over and give the other team potentially an easy chance at setting up their own offense and pounding the ball back down your throat and scoring anyway. And so by eliminating that call, what it does is it takes away judgment from the referee of trying to figure out, okay, was that a double? Was that not a double? Allows play to continue, right? So you haven't stopped action. And so I can see from their side is that the goal is to encourage continuous action. And if the referee's not having to make that particular judgment call, and you allow the game itself to kind of decide whether to penalize that set or not, it could be that it ends up just being a wash, right? That the points still get scored to the right team in the end, and we haven't stopped action and created a place. And we've all seen coaches, yelling at the refs or looking at them with great indignation over the calls. And actually, technically, I believe, if I'm remembering some of my rules learning correctly, the referees are supposed to, in a sense, before the match, gauge the skill level of the setters and call the match to match the skill, the better skill level. And that doesn't happen in practice, because can you imagine if you went to a match and you had a clear difference in quality between the two setters, and the team with the better setter was essentially getting this advantage in a sense, because the lesser quality setter is getting a whole bunch of double calls over the course of the match just because they're not quite as skilled as the other setter. And so that part of it, I think, is kind of where people have sort of stepped back and said, well, you can't. Because that's a big argument that you could end up getting into. And you get some referees, it's kind of their thing to call a double. And after a while, everybody gets annoyed by it. It's like, oh, well, great, this guy's the up, or this woman's the up ref tonight. Get ready for a lot of doubles, right? So it eliminates all of that, probably creates a little more consistency, keeps action going, and hopefully lets the play on the court work out whether or not the bad set gets penalized or not. And it also then makes it keeps athletic plays from getting a whistle and stopping the action. So we'll see how it works out. I don't think it'll be the disaster everyone thinks it is, but I certainly get it. If you have these setters that have spent countless, I mean, hours in the gym of just doing nothing but trying and, delivering clean balls to their hitters, you still got to put the ball in the right zone for that hitter to be at their best. So that none of that's going to change.
No.
So
Yeah,
you
Kurt,
have.
see, that's such a reasonable and well thought out answer compared to what I believe Jake has written in our document, which says, quote, "Oh my word, that basically breaks volleyball."
I wrote this at 7:10 in the morning on Friday. It was sent to me by three listeners. So shout out to those listeners. I think that
About
shows
that.
that we
That's
have
nice. Okay.
a pretty loyal listening crew here. You guys
Well,
know who you are,
now.
so thanks for that. But that was the okay, I just have to read through this real quick. But I mean, I don't know. I think there's a lot of skill that goes into
I'll be
setting
curious.
and if I don't
I'll be
know.
curious if, like, someone figures out how to very deftly do a double touch set that also gets the right spin towards the opponent that you need. Like, get just kickstarts the front top spin just a little bit, just a little bit, not too much, but
You got to remember the rule says that second touch has to go to a teammate.
right. That's what I'm saying. Like, you kick
Yeah,
set, like, if you're
you can't try to use that to bend it like Beckham back over the net where nobody is, right? It's
So, well, side spin,
it's
you go for it, but you kind of shove. I don't know. I've clearly played
yeah.
0 minutes of volleyball in my life, but
I
it's
just
but you
wouldn't
have to
want it to
also
be an
remember
overcorrection,
I'm old enough that back when I learned how to referee intramural volleyball at Tech, the first contact had to be clean as well, because we were instructed as officials that if the first contact, if your hands weren't locked together like this on that, and arms out on that first contact, we were to call a double, two hits, because physically we were told that if your hands aren't connected, and the contact, the energy, and the contact of the ball will move one or both of your arms to where it
Interesting.
is impossible to not have the ball touch one arm, then the
And then the
next
other,
before
right.
going up, right? And years ago, they changed that rule to allow that first contact to be as nasty as possible. And even, here in later years, you can now kick the ball, right? The skate saves are legal now in
If you're
volleyball. And
if
so
you
what
got
they've
to
been doing is trying to encourage the athletic plays, because that it keeps action going, it's exciting for the fans, and it keeps people paying admission, right?
I
And that's
think,
what you want.
it feels like a smart move when you're trying to, and this article mentions it too, when you're trying to capitalize on the massive increase in viewership that the sport's getting right now too. Like, you don't want to have rules and stuff in the game that when you think about it, you're trying to make you when you're turning into just a sport for kids and then kind of turning into like an entertainment program, you got to stay entertaining too. And if you have a way to probably very likely inconsequentially change the game that makes it more watchable,
Yeah. What I wanted
that
to
just
see
makes
is I
sense
want to
to
see
go forward with.
the athletic plays continue. That'll be the
Yeah.
thing. It's when you're like, wow, how did they even get to that ball and keep it alive and not have it suddenly go, oops, double, sorry.
Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Makes sense to me as well. This is all very relevant immediately right now because Tech's first set of preseason scrimmages start this week. On Saturday, they'll face off against Tennessee and Virginia and Auburn. And I think that's back to back to back. All games are free admission at O'Keefe Gym. So go and check those out.
Yeah,
Gentlemen, we have.
the Big South qualifier is this weekend, and that it always coincides with the club volleyball event because the Big South qualifier is one of the biggest sporting events that comes to town every year.
That's the one in the Congress Center, right?
That's the one in World Congress Center.
Yeah.
That's the one where I got to introduce then Governor Sonny Perdue to the sport of volleyball. So it was
Nice, nice.
the and I mean, because you're gonna have tens, it's over 10,000 players plus their parents here in town. And so also it then you get player is the players on the Georgia Tech campus. And
Yeah.
there, the nice thing about recruiting rules and whatnot is that you might actually be able to talk to coaches
I might
when
have, yeah.
at the World Congress Center they can't talk to them.
Interesting.
So.
I do want to just plug real quick to our listeners, bigsouth.us. They'll have just some backsplash like
Oh,
banner
yeah.
pictures and stuff. And if you just look at that image, I think it conveys almost perfectly what some of these big tournaments look like. I think, oh, probably just 20 from the picture I have up right here.
Oh
It's
no, I'm
all
looking at
buildings
this
and
now
halls
too.
at GWCC. A, B,
Well,
and
you
C
go
is a
into a
lot
convention.
of floor space.
Yes,
So
you go into a convention floor, and there's 100 volleyball courts set up. And
yeah.
well, in one of those rooms is probably 50, 60, 50, 60 of them, and they're all playing at the same time.
It's
And so you
incredible.
want. You want chaos, right?
Yeah.
Organized chaos. There's a lot of organized chaos going on in those qualifiers they play at convention centers. It all works and it's all great, but yeah, it's something to see.
I might need to give the team a heads up if I'm going to come on Saturday, just so I don't lose my seat to 18,000 different kids that could take
No, it won't be that.
that stage.
Trust it's you get some folks there, but yeah, you'll be fine.
I think when I was in Boston a couple of weeks ago, they had a similar event to this called it's like the Boston Volleyball Festival, and it was in their convention center, and it was on the bottom floor, and I just well, our conference was on the top floor. And I looked out onto that, and it was just volleyball courts as far as the eye could see. It was so much energy, so much volleyball on that floor.
Well, and that's why the governor showed up the time that he did, is that there was someone, I think there was someone on his staff whose daughter was playing club volleyball and said to them, and trying to explain this to him, said, no, you don't realize how many people are here in town for this event. This is like rivals some of the largest conventions we get in town every year. And so I'm there at a court near the door, and he happened to come walking in and happened to be the guy he asked, like, what the heck's going on? And so I spent 20 minutes explaining club volleyball to Governor Perdue, and it was interesting, but it was, and then he walked through the entire convention floor just taking it in. So, but he got it by the time that day was over. He's like, all right, this is a good economic engine for Atlanta.
Well, and I think that speaks to the power of just like being exposed to sport. It's what so many people have come onto with women's basketball, softball, even college baseball in the last couple of years. Like you just have to see it and get that access. And And yeah, that I think the rest is history. But compared to, four baseball fields going at once or two pools at a swim meet, 100 games is truly a sight.
It's a lot.
Yeah. A lot of
It's
whistles.
so much. It just even looking like, because there was a glass, I guess a glass wall, and then probably like an entire story separating me from the actual action on the court. And just even looking at it was just, I started getting the vapors, basically. It was pretty awesome. In like the literal sense of the word, awesome. Like it was pretty cool. Gentlemen, we have Kurt here. Are there any burning questions that you've had to ask Kurt over his years of covering Georgia Tech volleyball for the Institute?
So I'm going to lead here because I was trying to think of a couple. And so I asked my fiance, who I accidentally turned into a giant Georgia Tech volleyball fan right when we first started dating. So thanks, Georgia Tech volleyball. That worked out. I was like, hey, like we have Kurt on. Do you want to ask him any questions? And she says, I
Sure.
can't think of anything. It's like asking the president of the United States of volleyball a question. Where do I even start? So that's the reputation you've got.
That
I was going to
scary.
say, I think
Definitely not.
the bar's super high, and I think we've had just some of the like background on before, but yeah, like it sounds like you got into the sport before being a volleyball dad. Is that a good read on how you got into it?
Well, I ended up on the broadcast. We had a gentleman named Ed Martin at WREK, who was, I'll just say, not of college age, had been around a while, and he was a fan of volleyball. He's from California. He loved the sport, and right about that time, the rules in volleyball had changed to change the scoring system from what was known as side out scoring, where each game was played to 15 and you could only score if you were the serving team,
Okay.
to what we now know today, what we see today, which is called side out scoring. In other words, whichever side earned that point, you actually get a point on the scoreboard, whether you were serving or not. And the reason they made that shift, and I'd have to go back, is to see when it could be the international game had already made that shift. But what it did is it made the length of the matches more predictable. And if you want TV and you want radio, you can't have a thing to where one match is an hour long and the next one is 3.5 hours long, right? The broadcasters want some sort of range of predictability for how long these things are going to take. And so with the change to side out scoring and the fact that Tech was actually pretty good at the time, not that they aren't pretty good now, but they were in one of their, sort of runs of 10 or 12 years of being really good. And so he was like, oh, well, we should put this on radio. And I was doing women's basketball color with Richard Musterer at the time, and had been doing as like, for 5, 6 years. And so they were going around essentially to the people around the WREK sports world, just kind of saying, is anybody interested in trying to do this? And I said, sure, I'll give it a try. I didn't know a whole bunch about the game other than what I knew from my old, I had took, there was a class years ago called athletic officiating. It's a PE class, and you learned how to referee. You had a set of sports you learned how to referee, and one of them was volleyball. And from that, I was able to referee intramural volleyball matches there at Tech. I was getting paid a little bit of money to do it, so it's not like I'd never seen the game before. So I said, I'm game. We'll give it a try, and it worked out. And now what, 21 years, 20 now start the 22nd anniversary, if you will, coming up here in the fall. And so I've been, pretty blessed to be able to do that for this long. But my daughters played sports. Now my younger one was the one who ended up the volleyball player, and at that time, She was just starting to get into it in middle school. So it kind of both happened at the same time. But being the volleyball dad helped being the volleyball broadcaster because I was able to be in and
Unfair.
around the sport in a way where I wasn't necessarily broadcasting it. Plus, I had access to a ton of really good club volleyball coaches here in town to discuss the game, learn about it, and talk about it. And then, because I knew the Georgia Tech coaches and had, at least shook hands a couple times with some of the other ACC coaches, you got ways of learning and talking and understanding the game better. And I figured out a rhythm for doing it on radio because volleyball on radio, you'd be until you actually try to do it, you don't realize how fast the game moves. And so to try to paint a picture on radio with the speed of the game is, it takes some time to work that out.
I
So
believe it.
that's where, I mean, that's how long I've been doing. That's kind of, it sort of started because I was the one who said yes when it came around, when they were asking around that world at the time to come do it. Ed made sure it got on the air. We ended up with, a booster who was willing to help fund paying board operators for many years. And now we've gotten to the point where the radio station sort of does pick that up and as they're doing it themselves. But it's so there were a lot of folks who sort of came together and said, we really want this. And it became a net positive, at least, for the program. At least, certainly at the time when there were very few other schools doing volleyball radio at all. And also WREK being on the internet made it so that distant parents could listen to the match if they weren't in town. And so it became a nice thing for the program to have. My hope is that it stays a net positive for the program. And it'll continue. Someday someone will have to take over for me because time usually wins at some point, but we'll see, what'll happen with that long term. I get a lot of support from, the athletic administration and saying, no, we want this, and the coaches, they want it. It would have been easy when TV came around to say, why bother? But they've said, no, we want this. It's one of the uniquenesses of Georgia Tech volleyball, and they want to see it continue.
Well, sure is appreciated on our end too. I only had one
Thanks.
other like crazy pressing question. I don't know if you gents had anything. I don't want to
I
monopolize everything here.
had my hour and a half with him a couple of months ago, so yeah, you go for it.
Fair enough, fair enough. The one that came to mind as somebody who's, seen plenty of Georgia Tech volleyball, the latest kind of innovation that they've got is playing a big game, potentially maybe two, I don't know, in the future at McCamish. I'm very interested to hear your thoughts. I mean, I've been to both of them. I thought they were both interesting events, but playing the big game outside of the band box did have a different feel. That was the one that came to mind to ask. So.
So in the pre McCamish version of the building was horrible for volleyball. And we pl the reason that matches got would were being played over there at all was that if you want to host the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament, you have to do it in a room big enough to meet NCAA standards for minimum attendance, all right, minimum number of seats. And so back in the aughts, right, when we were in the tournament and we were hosting in Alexander Memorial Coliseum. And if you remember the Olympic configuration of that building where they drop the floor and the seating is kind of up above, and they didn't have the floor seating for volleyball, and because of the way that building works, it was dead. right? And because sound from the fans kind of went out here and then down on the floor. And so you lost all of the energy you had in O'Keefe. Now,
yes.
Those matches we won many of them, and that was fine, but it didn't take long. Sorry, I have a light that keeps turning off. It didn't take long before magically the capacity of the O'Keefe gym became exactly the minimum for the NCAA.
That's
Okay.
convenient.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, it
Yes.
was pretty amazing. Where overnight it was like, oh yeah, we put in enough people to host this tournament on a regular basis in this building. Now,
Yeah.
at the moment, because of the last, I don't think we've won a match in McCamish.
Nope. Oh, for two.
And as a result, our current staff is not a fan of playing in McCamish because we don't win, right?
Yeah.
And if we went in there and won, it would be like, yeah, let's do this, right? Because if you step back from any emotion or any of these kinds of things, and you're trying to look at how do we grow the volleyball program? How do you get more fans to be able to see the match, right? Well, the Zelnak Center was supposed to be that venue, right? Because the original configuration of the Zelnak Center would have included a new volleyball venue. And sort of like the Derby Gym at Clemson, where you would have rollout seats and you could put, say, 3,000 into that facility for volleyball. Well, we didn't raise enough money to build the full Zelnak Center. So the volley, the extra, the we only built half of it because that's what we had the money for. And so the new volleyball gym went by the wayside, right?
Interesting. I
If
never knew
you look
that.
at it from like, where do you get money? Where do you get more seats? Where do you do this? The quickest solution is move Tech's home venue over to McCamish, right? But you lose all of the sort of the character you get in O'Keefe and the home court advantage. Now, the McCamish configuration is much better for volleyball because you don't have the floor sunk down. You've got seats that go all the way up to the edge of the basketball part of the floor, just like in a sense,
Still
like
plenty
they
long.
do at O'Keefe. So you can get close enough on the sidelines to where the sound, you got energy from the fans, you've got it's much better than Alexander Memorial Coliseum. But until we win there,
I know it, yeah.
if we would go in and win a match in there, then the maybe the some of the thinking would probably change pretty quickly if it seemed like it was a home court advantage. But at the moment, it doesn't feel like a home court advantage, and so it's hard to make a good case for playing there more often. But I think as the program, if the program continues with the quality that it has and the demand for tickets, you could then maybe get more than 2,000 a night on a normal night for a home match, right? Which you can't do in O'Keefe. And so it's always going to be that how do we create, if we want to, if Georgia Tech wants more volleyball seating, how do they do that without losing the home court advantage that O'Keefe is? And then, of course, turning on all the lights and whatnot in McCamish isn't cheap either, right? So you have to
Good
have
point.
enough people coming in to make it so you're not losing money by opening the doors. So it's going to be an interesting future along those lines of how do you continue to expand the volleyball program and maintain the quality of the volleyball program and maybe generate more revenue out of volleyball with, but it's like you got to have a facility of some kind to do that with, and how do we do that? And there's been all kinds of ideas that have been floated over the years of how do you get money for a different venue, for an expanded venue, all kinds of ideas. We're gonna we're going to take the roof off of O'Keefe and we're going to do all of this crazy stuff to it and add more seats and do whatever we're going to do. And those are all great ideas. None of them have actually physically happened yet. And I don't know if any of them ever will, but from a being able to do something tomorrow to add seats for volleyball, McCamish is the is your solution, right? But we got to win there. it's got to be to where the coaches and the players, everyone feels like it is our home court and it is an advantage for teams to play
Well, keep in
for
mind.
us
Well,
for teams to play
no,
there.
Jack, I need to get my piece in. Just one sentence. I
Go ahead.
feel validated. I feel validated in hearing that. And thank you. That's
This,
all right.
I have a very simple solution. Just don't schedule Pitt in the building.
Well, I mean, we lost to
Or the other
Georgia in the
one.
building, and we shouldn't have lost to Georgia
Wait,
either.
should not have lost to Georgia.
I don't think I took a breath for like 5 straight minutes talking about that, but we don't need to grind that tape yet.
That game had its that there was many reasons why we lost and should not have lost that match, but whatever. That was
I get it, but
that's episode like 183, if anyone wants to go back.
but it's you also you know it's this is we've got a and again this is not a knock on Coach Collier at all or anything like that, so don't let anybody try to interpret it as I said as I'm saying anything negative about the program or the staff, but it's just the realities of the building of the of what is available to for use by the volleyball program to try to grow their attendance, which I'm sure they would love to do. I mean, if you went to Coach Collier and said, "Hey, do you want to have more fans, more capacity for fans at the matches?" Obviously, they're all going to say, "Yeah, we'd love to," but you also want to do it in a way that continues to make where we're playing a home court advantage. It's of some kind. But there's schools. Maybe you look at Louisville, right? They'll play matches. They have an on-campus facility they play in most of the time. We played them in Freedom Hall in the NCAA tournament when we went up there and played them there, right? And then they'll also play some at the Yum Center, just where the same thing, their basketball venue. So it's the best way to break that ice is for us to find is to start winning matches there. And if we're winning matches there, then it becomes, a better sell to say, let's put some of the matches that we have that could generate more revenue in a place where we have more seats.
Makes sense.
Yeah, no,
Or build a new
absolutely.
volleyball venue, right? That is in the middle between McCamish and O'Keefe, and you can bandbox that as much as you want.
Either way, hopefully this is the last time I have to think about the LNN House of Pain Federal Credit Union building for 6 months. But yeah.
Maybe
Oh,
longer.
don't worry. We'll talk about them in sooner than 6 months. I have a feeling when we start previewing volleyball. Well, let's get into some of the content that we have for this week. Let's start with women's basketball. And I think, Kurt, you have a little bit of experience, like you said, with calling women's basketball with old friend Richard Musserer. We'll start with their one game from this week, which in our notes we have as bad at Mississippi State. In the WBIT, which, as we mentioned before, is a new tournament sponsored by the NCAA. Kurt, what were your feelings on this result for women's basketball as they closed out their season?
Oh, I'm sure they hated it. I mean, no one wants to lose, right?
No.
I mean, it's
Especially like that.
it,
Especially like that.
I mean, did any of you see Jeff Walz's press conference from the NCAA tournament? You had a reporter essentially ask him about turnovers and why you have so many turnovers, and he got snarky and started going on about, well, you got to practice that. It just doesn't happen, right? You got to work at being good at that. And it was a really snarky sort of answer for some of that stuff. But at the same time, if you talk to the players and coaches, they didn't want to lose. They didn't want to lose. B and B, they didn't want to lose like that. And it just was one of those things where, you know, Mississippi State perhaps being angry about being not in the NCAA tournament, right? Decided they were going to take their anger out on their head coach's former employer. And because their coach worked at Tech under Michelle Joseph and before he went to Louisville, and now, you know, and good for him being a head coach now at Mississippi State. But they came out and were like, we're going to prove to the world we should have been in the NCAA tournament. And that's what they were after. I haven't seen how they're doing with TCU tonight as to whether, you know, they got the same sort of thing going on. But yeah, we've had games this year with our team where we just, for whatever reason, don't shoot well, you know, for a long stretch. And, you know, the Notre Dame game at home was like that, where we went a slow start shooting and Notre Dame just was able to run over us. And Mississippi State did the same thing. It's, you know, we have still a young team, right? We're led by sophomores, right? And so we're led by some very good sophomores that I want to keep at Georgia Tech for their entire careers. I want Toni Morgan to stay with us, you know, until she graduates. I want Kara Dunn to stay with us until she graduates. I want Rusna to stay with us until she you know, I want all of those women that are on that team to be with us from start to finish. I don't know whether they will be, won't be. But that's up to them. That's their life, right? And they get to decide how to live their life and what they're going to do. And so, you know, it's not for me to say whether what they do, but hopefully Georgia Tech is where they wanted to be. Hopefully they see that this is a program on the rise and they can be responsible for that rise. And be responsible for hopefully some pretty special things happening over the next, you know, 2 years for those sophomores. And so no, they didn't want to have it end that way. Not at all. They even if, you know, no one wants to lose, but this is the time of year where only, you know, there's only one team in that tournament that's going to end the season with a win. There's only one team in the NCAA tournament that's going to end the season with a win. And so did you lose tonight? Thursday night? Did you lose tonight? Did you lose next week? Did you make it to the end and get a win? Chances are you're going to be one of the 31 teams that lost, or you're going to be one of the 67 teams that lost in the NCAA tournament. But yeah, they wanted to show better that night, obviously. And it just, for whatever, one of those things that happened, it just didn't. But the thing I really like about this group of young women is they don't quit. They don't fold up the tent and go, it's not our night. Oh, well, and we'll go do our, I mean, that's what happened in the Notre Dame game. Were they going to come back fully in that game? Probably not. But at the same time, they played that game as best they could to the end and tried to come back They did that at Mississippi State. And again, it wasn't their night and it wasn't going to happen. But this group of young women, credit to them. Credit to the coaching staff. They played at the end, win or lose, wherever it is. They don't fold up and just go away. And so I like that attitude. I like that fight from them. I like that accountability from them. And I'm looking forward, hopefully, to the roster all coming back who are eligible to come back. And the Fab Four, right, that they've got coming in from the state of Georgia next year.
That's a huge
adding
class.
Adding some new dimensions to what that team can do. And maybe they find some post players in the transfer portal, if that's what they've got to do, as well as go out and find some freshmen. But there's one that knows more than Coach Fortner and her staff as to what they need. And there's no one more focused on trying to fill those needs than them, because there's the one whose paycheck depends on the whatever success they're going to have in order to, you know, you and me, We can talk about this all we want, but we don't have,
Inconsequential. Inconsequential. Yeah.
we don't have any skin in the game, right? None of us is going to lose our job or get a better job or get a bigger paycheck as a result of how they perform. All I can do is be supportive and wish them all well, and I want them all to succeed. And I'm sure that they will, and I want them all to stay at it and be tech women, because there is, I still believe in the 40-year decision, and I'm hoping that these are smart women, that they understand that as well, but they also understand they've got an opportunity to make a name for themselves as tech athletes, as being the women that rebuilt this program. And so take that challenge and run with it. I hope they will.
That's there's two threads I want to pick at there. One, I like the attitude about the, only one team ends on a winner. I remember walking out of the Clemson game in 2020 that ended the men's basketball season going, this might be the last time I see a season ending win. Just they're not that common, but that we don't have to unbox that. The point I want to, dig in a little bit more on this team in particular is I want you three gents to hazard a guess. Do you know what the year over year change in win percentage was for this team? I promise this is relevant.
What they won 13 games last year and they won 17
Going
this
like
year.
17 this year,
They won
they were
17 this year,
plus.
so but dude, I don't know. This is what calculators are for.
That's
It's
what I'm
I'm
like
here for.
15,
Oh.
150, right? He went up probably at least 150, maybe a little more.
Actually, any thoughts?
I'll say if we're setting the line at 150, I'll take
You want the
under
over?
because I think it's fairly similar.
It's 101. It's close. I think a 100-point improvement is very solid progress year over year. I will say last year's was an aberration. It was the lowest annual total that we've seen in quite some time from Georgia Tech. But my addendum there is if they can show market or
There we
similar
go.
improvement year over year, they're right back in that tournament caliber. And I know win percentage is a massively oversimplified number, but this team is one that improved a lot. I think it's one that improved a lot as the year went on. We saw them competitive at NC State, which is an extraordinarily difficult place to play.
Yeah,
We
it's
saw
funny game.
a very, I'd say, a pretty entertaining finish to the ACC slate. If that's the way things are pointed, plus the recruiting class that we really haven't dove into too much yet on this podcast,
Summer.
I'm sure that's a summer episode coming because there's quite a lot to talk there. But I think my tease is it's a team that took a step up. It's a team that got better as the year went on. It's one that has a pretty steady floor right around that, 600, a little bit higher, a little bit lower win percentage in a given year, and that, winning's entertaining. So that's something that can resonate with folks outside of the storylines, because I feel like we try so much to say, okay, here's things to look at, here's things to think about. If there's one thing to take away, they got better and help is on the way. How's that?
That I think works. They and that there's an NC State loss, which was painful, but also at Syracuse, they almost got Syracuse as well. So this team was really close to two extremely good road wins in conference that would have changed. That maybe that doesn't get them out of maybe that doesn't get them out of the WBIT because they were a seven seed on one side of that bracket. But at least get, if it
Maybe a
gets that
host.
if that gets you to 19 wins, that, yeah, it's something like that. And two those 19 or two of those two were really good ones, which is nice to say. I guess, I mean, the bottom still fell out three times this season and like seriously fell out three times. Maybe the four, I don't know if you want to count both Duke games, but just the first Duke game. But yeah, it was, and Duke just beat they had a big win today in the tournament too.
Ohio State.
They beat Ohio State. So they're absolutely doing stuff. What was the last thing? Yeah. Reinforcements on the post is why we lost one of the reasons we lost to Mississippi State. We could not do anything down low whatsoever. We didn't score for 5 minutes and 45 seconds of game time to start the game, and a lot of that was just we were getting layups just deflected, like Moses Malone was down there or something, or Dikembe was down there, and we just had nothing to do. It was rough. We only had four people score until Rusna scored late in the fourth. which is just not a way to win games. And Toni is getting there, but she's not quite at the I can score 35 on my own and win us a game. She's getting there, but she hasn't reached that point. But I think overall, yeah, Kurt, you hit the nail on the head on basically everything there.
Real-time follow-up on Mississippi State, by the way. They advanced to the quarterfinals of the WBIT. They dispatched TCU earlier today by a score of 68 to 61. They will face the winner of Penn State Belmont, which is taking place tomorrow at 6 p.m. on
Fun. That's
ESPN
a
Plus.
Penn
I like
State,
that
another
matchup.
team that probably a little
Yep.
unhappy with how that all went down with the NCAA tournament, since they were, I think they were the team with the highest NET score, NET number that didn't get an at-large invite.
Someone's got to be that though.
Because they were up in the 20s. It was like
Oh,
crazy. They were
well,
like in the
that's high.
high
That
20s.
is
that
they
is
got
impressive.
Indiana
And
stated, and they're in a major
Columbia
conference.
with a 57 got an at-large invite, right? So it was
Wow.
because I was expecting Columbia was going to be in the WBIT, maybe one of the higher seeded teams, or might be a team that Tech would face early on in that event in the WBIT. But Columbia ended up getting an at-large invitation, which I was surprised by. But there's this like Penn State, Washington State, and I think even Washington, were teams that were sort of left out. There was a little surprise even from some with Miami not making it. So it was but this is what happens with the committee, right? Sometimes they're whatever they're weighing, whether it's like the last 10, and some other there are some of those teams that their last 10 games maybe weren't their best, and so that discounted them in some fashion. But Mississippi State, Penn State, they're probably playing with a little chip on their shoulder, and it wouldn't surprise me to see both of them go far in this event.
For sure. For sure. The other quarterfinalists, by the way, Illinois. So shout out Jake. Washington State, Toledo,
I
Tulsa,
just lived
Villanova,
there. I
St.
didn't go
Joseph's,
there.
and Mississippi State, and then the winner of Penn State Belmont. So
There you go.
there's your remaining field for the WBIT. Kurt, if you had to describe this season in one sentence, what would it be? And gentlemen, I'm
This
coming to you
is this
next,
is
so prepare
this is
something.
yeah, this is the team that didn't get the signature win that they needed to get.
I like that. I like that.
That
Oh, yeah.
was that the it's so it's in there's a little bit of missed opportunity there, but we've always seen these teams, we've always seen these Tech teams, they'll even in the leaner years than these, you would get a signature win at some point. You would upset somebody, and this team came close several times, but never could quite get over that hump and get that to get that last to get that signature win that might have, from a psychological standpoint, said to them, "Yes, we can do this. We can win these games." And that's the thing that's the last thing this group needs, is just that get that one win, get over that psychological barrier of yes, we can win these games, because we have seen that they're capable of winning some of these games and competing with some of the best teams in the conference and in the country, and they'll get that win. It'll come. It just this was the year it didn't.
Gents,
Akshay, can I modify your question?
go for it.
I'd like to use my sentence or my phrase to describe how I feel for next season. And it's expectant. I feel like we're due. And it's a combination of that lack of a signature win. It's the floor has generally there have been plenty of WNIT and early exits NCAAs over the last 15, 20 years for this team. And that's kind of right around where they've lived for most of that. There's been some high variance and some low variance, but I feel like this team has the talent, the potential, and the help coming in to have me. I'm ready for, not that I'm ready for next year. We got a lot of living left to do until then, but the bar is there, and I think I'm expecting to kind of hit that. So,
Jack, you're
you've got
last.
a lot of gas, not that much handling. They know how to press go, but what they get off the course, it takes sometimes the car just doesn't respond when they're out there. But that comes with experience. So that yeah, I mirror a lot of the sentiments here as well of what going forward I think should look like, because they saw the glimmer pieces. The pieces were there. We had record-breaking games. A lot of every player basically had career highs in something. Ina's got so much better defensively, and just I remember last year seeing her out there. It's like, I can tell you're going to be good, but you look like a stick. Like if people would just run over you. And this year, people would choose to not go to her if they could avoid it. So like they're making the year-over-year improvements. So.
Good stuff. Let's flip over to the softball diamond, which Kurt has a little bit of experience with as well. First, before we get into the week's results, I want to talk a little bit, or give space for Jack to talk a little bit about his article and interview with Hunter Bunch from earlier this year, Georgia Tech softball's hitting coach. Earlier this
Earlier this
week, excuse me.
yeah earlier this year, as in 2 days ago.
Technically correct.
In fact, I got time to talk with Hunter before I was in Texas, just to kind of be like, what did you do to the hitting? Why is it like this good? Because it was a lot of the same people who were all here last year, and they were nowhere near as good as they are now. And now Mal Black and Madison Dobbins seem to hit a homer every like six at bats at this point. And I think the one of the biggest things to note is he changed their swing path. They were coming very steep to the ball when they were at the plate last year, and they were minimizing the window of opportunity to hit a good to just good contact. And so he flattened out their swing. He's like, it has to be between 6 and 10 degrees of where you want to have your bat path come in. And which I'm like, that makes sense. It's a very large sphere. Like, just give yourself the best chance to put on the your very large bat. Give yourself the best chance to get some good contact on it. They swing hard, and that's been showing. And then the other big thing is, he just kind of let them all swing naturally for what's good for them. Which I don't know if that wasn't what was happening, but that was the thing. He's like, just do what feels good. And the biggest and version of this is Jen Soleo, whose stance now, her back leg is on the plate side of the batter's box, and her front leg is on dugout side of the batter's box. Like, she is very, very large, wide stance, but she loves it, and she's done better. Everyone's done better from this. So, and just good mentality, good scouting. I mean, he's kind of treating it like an offensive coordinator, seeing what defenses give him, seeing what pitchers give him, and adapts all the time. So, he's big on the stats and whatnot. I'd recommend y'all go read that, because there's a lot there that's more than I need to bother reading on here. But
Story
I
time
think
with Jack.
that
How many words did it end up being, Jack?
4,100.
Yeah, so take a 15 minutes of your day, go check that out. It's on the site. I think it's still in the top bar of the site, so
Thank
you
you,
can
sir.
find it very easily. But yeah, go check that out. Let's get into the results real quick. The two midweek results from this past week: a 4-3 win over Charleston Southern and a 9-2 win over Coastal Carolina. More offensive firepower there, especially in that second one versus Coastal Carolina there as well. And then getting to the midweek at UNC, a 1-2 weekend at UNC, a 9-3 loss on Friday, a 6-2 and a 6-2 win, excuse me, in the middle, and then a 7-2 loss on Sunday. A rough outing, I think, for the pitching staff on both ends of the weekend here. Chandler Dennis did not have a good start to that first game, and then turned into prime John Smoltz, and then went back down to giving up a couple runs there late. And then in the latter game, Tech got out to an early lead, but then pitching staff couldn't really put together the rest of the game. So, I think all told, a summation of some of the same, like kind of a return to earth, I'd say, of some of the problems that we've been seeing or pointing out the past couple of weeks, wouldn't you say, Jake?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say so. I think I kind of couched last week's results with like a this is a great 1-3, even though it's or yeah, even though it's 1-3. you know, there's always positives, I think, that you can determine in a loss. This is a relatively long road trip. They still come back 3-2, et cetera, et cetera. But all that said, you know, it's kind of the regression back to the mean that we saw in Tech really executing, but also getting away with it in a, what was Jack, did it run 15 or 16 game streak? I can't remember.
15, 15. 15.
15. Okay.
Yeah.
15 game streak. You're going to get some wins that, you know, late game heroics, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it all said, the team's going to continue to hit. You just have to hope that the pitching staff can kind of
Piece it together.
keep it together, because there are those crooked number innings. I know that this is not the most, this is more of the vibes based assessment that I think I usually wind up giving in terms of my softball analytics. But you know, a big crooked number in the first run of the series seemed, at least to me, having that in the background, a little bit of poor omen. I think they really acquitted themselves well Saturday, top to bottom. Whenever UNC put one across, they answered. They had a couple, you know, string together a couple hits and get some runs, held them to four hits on their end of the plate, and then Sunday just it wasn't their day. It was more of how I felt about kind of going through today's, despite taking an early lead. All that said, I'll introduce the Universal Selection Index once more. I still have them in the tournament field, but that does not factor in today's result yet. And there's a lot of season left there too. But the Jake Math TM has us in the last four in, so that's not the worst place in the world to be.
Wow.
And they get, I believe, Syracuse and Kennesaw, and the opportunity to get some road wins and stack those up this week. So.
I'm looking at the how today went down. We lost 7-2. We only had four hits, which is not great. We were leading, and then Blake allowed three runs, and all of them were unearned because we had two straight ROEs. One by who's in right? Vukadin, who's in right field? Who plays right field? That's not Vukadin. Is that Vukadinovich? I think it's Rook. And then one by Nelleman herself. That kind of sucked, and then they hit a homer off that. So three unearned runs, and then we just kind of had to figure it out from there because things seemed to unravel quickly once North Carolina got on the board, which is a thing that has happened with us at times. Is one team gets going, and then it just kind of snowballs and snowballs and snowballs. So Saturday's game was great. Saturday was great. Friday, yeah, as you said, Dennis was okay. Then fantastic, and then left in there just a tad bit too long, apparently. So that would this week in particular.
North Carolina's historically been a pretty good softball program, so you gotta, you know, give them a little credit as well. But you know, no one wants to be more consistent in the circle than the young women who've been there all year long. And so, you know, they're gonna keep working. They're gonna keep, you know, putting in the effort. And you've seen the flashes, right? We've seen the bits and pieces of where they can be. The question is, you know, where can they get consistently to where, not that they're always at their very, very best, but that, you know, it's like everything. You want to raise the floor, right? You want to make it so that when it's not going well, that you're not going down quite as far as you used to. And if they can continue to raise the floor, they'll be fine.
Yeah, for sure. And I think one of the things that we've come back to over the past couple of weeks is the difference between the pitchers on staff's ERAs and their FIP, their fielding independent pitching. And I think I've harped a lot on the overperformance there of those ERAs compared to FIP. But one of the things that is hidden in that difference too is how well the defense behind those pitchers is doing. Right, they are helping these pitchers out and cleaning up or putting out some fires, and doing a really good job of it and helping their pitchers succeed, even if they might not be having their best days. So, if you have that as your floor defensively, and you add just a little bit better or more consistent, it's not even better, it's just more consistent quality pitching. That's where you go from that last, Jake, I think you said last four out or last four in, but in any case, one more bracket of teams up.
It's last four in. I also have Louisville, NC State, and Notre Dame in consideration. Again, this is really early season math. It fluctuates pretty heavy this far out still. So take it with the appropriately sized grain of salt. I think North Carolina is probably a little bit underappreciated in the rankings so far too.
And you've got more good teams in the conference
Yeah.
as well now. So makes it a little harder. But I haven't looked lately to see whether their walk rate has been getting any better. Because if it gets to where they're not walking as many batters, that'll be a big help because you just don't have those extra runners on base. But it's walks. You see it in both softball and baseball, right? The walks in a lot of cases they come back to bite you somehow, and so
Never can never do.
I'm sure they'll be fine. In any of these sports, the difference between winning and losing is just so thin, and in a lot of cases it's just make one fewer mistake this game than you made the last one, and that can be the difference between winning and losing. So I'm really happy with how the team has improved this year. And let's just like everybody, not just us, coaches, players want more consistent pitching. They're all working on it. I'm happy to sit back and cheer them on while they do it and be happy to pat them on the back when it happens, because I'm confident it will.
Talking about baseball and softball together, weirdly, I just noticed that they both play in Kennesaw on Tuesday. So if anyone's local and really wants to get a double dose of Tech sports that just doesn't want to
There
do it
you
at
go.
Georgia Tech, consider that. I don't know if you can make it out to, that neck of the woods, but odd coincidence after both being in North Carolina this weekend too. So.
Yes, for sure. Just to talk about the fixture list, other than Kennesaw coming up, that's the midweek, and then the ACC series at the weekend. Is in Syracuse, who is number 127 in USI. Let's move over to baseball. Let's talk about them a little bit. Midweek win versus Georgia State. So that is pretty nifty. But this series versus number 20 UNC at the weekend in Chapel Hill. Oh boy. Not a ton to say. That's not a ton to say. I think the results kind of speak for themselves on this one. Jack, I don't know if you had any other notes on this game.
Not too much. I mean, we were hitting pretty fine and good. I remember watching the first bit of game, the first game, and like we were putting some really good wood on the ball. Like we were hitting solid stuff. Drew hit his 14th homer, and just couldn't. Like, we would get guys on base, but only got so many of them across. It was just really just hard at bats, but we had solid contact and just couldn't put it all together.
That felt like the one we had to have too. I know that's kind of a baseball fallacy. Man, again with a vibes-based take, but like
This is what you do.
when you put that many runners on base, you leave, two, three runners on in a couple innings, that really makes a difference in a one-run ball game,
Yeah, it
like
does. It
quite
does.
frankly.
It was a lot of that, and then looks like games two and three were not the not the ones to think or to go back to and think fondly of. So, are they the 20th team in the country? Yes. Were we playing on the road? Yes. So that's not great. I do want to reiterate about the Georgia State game though. State had that game. Like they really should have won that game, and then Burris got on, and then Matt Ellis just hit a bomb and got us clear at Georgia State, which was huge. The Georgia State Barstool was not having fun with that game, their Twitter account. By the time that was over, so I kind of feel bad for them a little bit because there's only not really many things Georgia State. We play them in everything, and they basically don't win.
Jack, be nice. Be
Jack loves
nice.
doing this where he
You're
invokes the
digging a
wrath of.
giant football-shaped hole, and we're going to pay for it in September if you keep talking like this.
I have no fear.
Making a lot of
So,
promises on credit,
I wish I had the confidence, man. But I do want to note one other thing. The one last note I would add on Saturday is bullpen did give up 7 runs in the last 2 frames that they were on the mound there. So that is one thing to flag, but I don't think that surprises anyone, and I'm not going to dwell on it any more than mentioning that fact.
No need for that as well. I think the problems that we've discussed before are the problems that still exist. So, talking about baseball's fixture list before we hop over to a quick break, midweek at Kennesaw, like we mentioned before, and then at the weekend they will be hosting Boston College. Jake, where do you have Boston College on your handy dandy USI calculator?
I gotta flip back over to the previous sheet. Give me 1 second. I have them at 40th. I have them in the field. I have them as pretty good. The interesting thing about this model is within given years, it tracks pretty strongly to RPI, but outside of given years, it tracks more to the peripherals. And Boston College has played a decent amount of road games, and just those RPI type builder, strength of schedule type. Type place, but even then they're sitting at number 95 in the country. But then again, everyone in the ACC's pretty not daunting this year, but everyone's feeling super competitive teams, so should make for interesting and quality baseball coming up.
Good to know. Just to talk about Boston College a little bit, they faced off against Virginia this past week. They did not do so hot, it seems. Virginia Tech, excuse me. Virginia Tech, best record in the ACC, 8-1. As of right now, they finish off the Boston College series with a 12-6 win. So, interesting note, but we will compartmentalize that for a future series. But for now, before we talk more about outdoor track and field, tennis and swim and dive, a short break.
Yes, you guys know the gist at this point. This podcast is brought to you by Section 103. Steven and the gang at Section 103 make the highest quality Georgia Tech materials. I'm wearing my Georgia Tech baseball, the Tech classic zip up sweater. I love this sweater. It's a great sweater. You can buy it too, section103.com. On the topic of baseball, they do have Drew Burris jerseys, number 8. Support him, support Section 103, wear Georgia Tech, and be themed for baseball by checking that out. As always, free shipping on orders over $70, and we'll keep you posted as new things rise. Code FTRS for 10% off. Tell them we sent you. Helps us, helps them, and makes you look great. So, with that, back to the show.
Welcome back to Signs of the Southland for Sunday, March 24th. Let's flip over to the track. They were at Tallahassee for Florida State Relays. The second day was a little bit delayed due to weather, but we do have 2 full days worth of results. Let's start with day one. The long and high jumps were on that day. For the men, Cameron O'Neill posted a second place finish in the long jump with a 7.48 meter finish. Three women finishers to discuss: Amiya Wilson at third with 6.33 meters, Jillian Catton at ninth with 5.74 meters, and then Kelsey Chambers with a 5.03 meter finish. In the high jump, three finishers to talk about here: Omar Arnault finished third, excuse me, with 2.08 meters. Camille Trotman and Carla Duplessis finished second and fifth, respectively, with a 1.46 or 1.64 and a 1.59 finish. Jake, any notables from day two?
Yeah, I basically want to cut them up as day one being more field and day two being more track. The highlights from the track then being a couple second place finishes. Of course, Eric Singleton Jr., he of indoor track and also Georgia Tech football notoriety, he did finish second in the 100 meter dash, confirming he is still active with the team. So that's interesting to keep an eye on there. We had a couple other podium finishes, including a relay. As everyone here knows, relays are my favorite
Hey,
as
there we
a
go.
swimmer and a person who enjoys scoring lots and lots of points. Getting second in a relay, especially for the women, shows depth and it shows speed. And I love both of those things. So congrats to Anna Witherspoon. Oh, I didn't write down the first names for everyone here, so I'm just going to read last names: Odafon, Witherspoon, Demery, and Joseph So congrats there. We also had Jameson Miller wind up on the podium in the 400 meter, and Gracie Marston finished third in the 800 as well. Oh, and Tristan Autry in the mile. He finished third.
Fantastic. Next up for track and field, they'll be splitting the squad for next weekend. Half of them will go to Florida Relays, not Florida State Relays, Florida Relays on the 23rd of March. And then the other half will be in Raleigh for the appropriately named Raleigh Relays on the 29th. Let's flip over to tennis. The men were off. They'll be back in action next weekend on the 28th. They'll face off versus number 14 FSU. And on the 30th, they'll host number 50 Miami. But let's talk about the women. Number 24 in the latest ITA rankings started off with not so great of a loss, a 6-1 decision versus number 42 FSU in Tallahassee, but salvaged a result in Miami, actually an upset result
Big
versus
win. This is a
Miami,
big, big win. Yeah.
a number 19 team in the nation, a 4-3 victory. Jack, let's start with the FSU results. What did you see with this one?
This is the they beat us bad. Like these
Yeah.
first sets are not close. 6-3, 6-2, 6-2, 6-4. It's generally pretty bad.
Tech was close to getting the doubles point, though.
We
Karolyi and
were.
Kate Sherbura barely dropped that seventh game up on court one.
Yeah, they were close there. And Bilicheva Nicholson got theirs handedly to give us at least a shot at it. Yeah, Kate Sherbrooke was the only singles player to even win her first set against Florida State. So when you only win one, I wonder about this. I've never done the tracking to see how determinant winning first sets are in college tennis. If that's like what the win rate is there, if you need to win 4.55 first sets to predict chances of winning, I don't know, something like that. Just think about it. This Miami match though is huge. I have to mention, because I'm looking at the scores here, we only won 4-3, so we had to win the singles matches we had to win. Bilicheva went to 15-13 in her first set tiebreak,
I bet
and
you can
went
imagine what was the last court to finish in that
and well, and they were and she
4-3
won
match.
and she won her third set 6-4. So this really came down to just one of the longest tiebreaks out there to pull off this upset. It's big. They're I this is. What a at times second third best team on campus, and so and they're going to have people in the NCAA field. They've always got someone in the field, and so stuff like this is showing me like, okay, they can win those first two rounds kind of matches if when they get there.
I want to highlight one player because I think we don't mention her enough. Scarlett Nicholson. I don't believe she's been ranked at all yet this year, but she did not lose this weekend. She did get Tech's only point against FSU. Yes, they just played 1-0 in the third set with that match already in hand for the Seminoles. But in terms and I guess DNF on the doubles, but she did manage to be a part of that doubles court victory in Tallahassee and also won her singles in Miami. So kind of flying under the radar, but not losing. That'll get you on the team in a nice place. So.
I gotta mention here, our tie breaks here, we played four against Miami and there were four and three of them went to extra points. The 15-13 one, Jane went to one that was 10-8, and there was a oh, no, three of them only two that went to extra. There's a 5-7 and a 7-2. A lot that
Well,
would have been
and
if it to be
Nicholson's
fair.
two sets in Miami did go 7-6, 7-6 with tie breaks. So that's gutty. That's winning the ones that matter a lot.
That's working
Also, to
hard.
be fair. Also, to be fair, one of those was 15-13, so it is basically a two tiebreaker.
It's a
Almost
double
tiebreaker
tiebreak.
sets at one. Yeah. Oh, wow.
It's huge. That's huge.
That is a lot of tennis. That is really a
Yeah.
lot of tennis.
And
For the women,
they slept good after that one.
yes,
definitely. Fun plane ride home, I imagine. They're extremely
Oh,
sleepy
yeah.
one, I imagine. Next up for the women, next weekend they'll host Notre Dame and Louisville. Notre Dame first serve will be on the 28th, and then for Louisville, it'll be on the 30th. Let's move over to the pool. The women's NCAA championships were in Athens, Georgia this past week. Not much to report from the Tech side. Anna Bratiscu in diving and Sabrine Brisson in the pool did not score, but here are their finishes. For Brisson, a 59.70 in the 100 breast, good enough for 27th place finish. And then in the 200 breast, a 210.75, which would be 33rd. Brad Askew, put together a 50th place finish in the 1 meter, and then a 24th place finish in the platform. One of you is in this document making
We're
changes to
both.
this
Jake and
section.
I are
Actually,
having an
both of you
argument.
are.
I can't count.
I'm sorry.
So, which of you wants to talk about the remaining results in this in the women's championships?
I'll give it at least a start. It's Virginia, and if Virginia was their own country at the Olympics this year, they would medal many, many times, and they will
Yes.
via the United States Olympic team this year. It was kind of a no-brainer. They were going to absolutely demolish everybody. And the fact we get Stanford now to swim against them, I don't know what. I mean, well, at this point, the Walsh and Gretchen, the Walshes and Kate Douglas trio is probably all about to graduate too. So
Hopefully, jeez.
they've been here a while,
Well, they
which
swam, they
is.
all swim in Tokyo, right? And they would have.
They did.
So
Yeah, they did swim in Tokyo. Yeah. So we're looking at a.
it's been 3 years though. It's only been 3 years
That's right. That's
because
right. That's
Tokyo
right.
was in 21.
It wasn't
This
21.
is
So
the COVID year makes us so
I'm very curious
hard.
if Virginia has lined up the next four best female American swimmers in their pipeline, because that's what they've had, which is just wild to think. But yeah, they destroyed everybody. That's just how that goes.
And here they all used to go to Stanford.
They did. And Stanford still
I'm
got second. I mean, they got fifth. They got fifth.
No,
But
they got
like
fifth.
they got fifth. And Stanford still had some fantastic swimmers this whole time too. It's just like, yeah, the distribution of them, it the top went the top went to the same place, because you can do that in swimming pretty easily.
Yeah, well, if you have
So
Katie Ledecky, that's like having five really good swimmers on your team, right?
yes. Yes.
She
Call up
skews
the
everything.
relays. So I've retroactive, forward aligning the conference champion or the national championships, if you will. Do you know the last time a non-ACC team won the women's swimming and diving title?
And we're counting Stanford in this, I guess, for this. Okay.
Hey. Of course we're counting Stanford. ACC legend, Katie Ledecky at
It's not
Stanford.
June
Katie
1st
Ledecky,
yet. It's not
ACC
June
legend.
1st yet.
Yes. I'm up there with ACC legend, Andrew Luck and
Oh,
other famous ACC legends,
no.
Eric
ACC,
John Elway and the whole bit, right?
ACC legend
Yeah.
Tiger Woods. I mean, we've got, he's
Tiger
ours now.
Woods. There you
He's
go.
ours now. He's ours.
Well, also the greatest play in sports history, the play. No, anyways, the answer to my specific question is 2016 was the last time a non-Stanford or non-Virginia team won the title. We don't have to talk about who actually won it because it's just going to make us all mad. But
Okay. Anyways,
but
you
yeah,
already
no.
made me mad.
Let's just talk about the let's just talk about next week then. Let's just talk about next week.
You're saying they might be somewhat local? Is that what you're trying to
Yeah,
say?
they might be. One could say
Okay,
that they
might
won
be.
three out of the four before that streak. I do want to highlight that 11 ACC or future ACC teams finished with points at NCAAs, further reiterating that we swim in a spooky neighborhood, and I believe that is the only two ACC teams or two other ACC teams than us that did not show up on the point score list were BC and Pitt. So, yeah, quite a good conference for swimming. We'll also kind of see that next week. We can talk probably a little bit more specifically about Georgia Tech, given that we do have more entries. We had six near misses, B cuts that were kind of in the top 40-ish. That was, not selected to go over to Indianapolis, but Tech does have four individuals, including Burke Saka in the 2 IM, Baturunlu in the 200 free, Leandro Odorici in the 100 breast, and Mert Kilavuus in the 1650 free. Max Fowler has qualified for both the 1 and 3 meter springboard, and then we've got both the 800 and 400 free relays into the meet. I
Lots
have
of
an
entry.
upshot here, unless anyone has thoughts before I just continue rambling about swimming.
Sure. I mean, last year, I'm hoping these guys overperform a little bit, because as a school, we underperformed really badly in 2023. Just everything was just not great at the meets last
What
year.
a
So,
ringing endorsement, Jack.
yeah, I know. I was watching all of these live because I was very hopeful, and it just happened that way. It sucks, but I mean, you got in your Jake that Bert actually might get points for the 1650 free. He's up there enough in the psych sheet where we could get a little bit of something, which would be really nice to have that.
Mert is a machine, and his 7 projected points, if applied to, and granted, this is a different sport entirely because women's swimming and men's swimming are very different. There is no UVA of men's swimming quite in the same way, but you slot that into the women's meet last week, that would put Tech at 32nd overall. If you slot 7 points into 2023 for the men, it would put Tech 33 overall. We currently have them in our proprietary ranking at about 27th in the country. I think that just outside the top 25, but inside the top 40 is a pretty reasonable expectation. The 800 free relay and the 400 free relay did qualify. We'll note that one of those was 17th, the 4 free relay. And if they can move up just one spot, that is 2 more points. So it really shows the margins you play with in the sport of swimming. Getting into that top 16 really does count. That's where the results come from. And when you get to put big numbers next to your name in terms of your finish at NCAA. So if we can get somebody besides Mert into the points, that's a really good sign for us. And I will note that diving entries are listed in zone order. So I have no idea where Max is projected to finish. So it could be a lot higher. I don't know. I just don't know. So,
Jake,
good for us.
I need to steal your last upset point about
Go for it.
ACC Legends Cal.
Yes.
Is that so? I have one of my guys I grew up with when I swam in DeKalb County. He won the 100 breast, Liam Bell. He won the 100 breast at Pac-12s, and it's tied for the fastest time in the nation this year with a guy from Virginia, I want to say. I forgot who it was. But all that to say, there is a shot. We've got a DeKalb County Druid Hills High School graduate, now Cal swimmer, who might be winning this event. He got third when it was here in Atlanta, and I think he got top five, I think, again last year. So
And you
this
personally let him go all the way across the country? How could you do that to us?
I
What were you
just I
doing?
didn't have much control over it. I find myself extremely
Get it,
lucky that
Jack.
I
Get
have
it.
swam multiple relays with an NCAA medalist, a NCAA champion. Let's put it that way, NCAA champion, at least team wide.
Not to
Is
forget, an ACC legend, of course.
ACC legend
ACC
Liam Bell,
legend.
ACC legend Liam Bell, also of Alabama fame, and I think maybe one of more school he transferred around a couple times too.
This
So
is such a
it's
good bit. I'm never gonna let this
yeah.
die. It's just so absurd that Stanford, Cal, and SMU are joining the Atlantic
Well,
Coast
part of this bit
Conference.
is that there is never going to be an SMU ACC legend. It's just Stanford and Cal. We won't be able to name
I
them
don't
when we
know.
get
I mean, the
there.
Gold Trans Am was really a blight on our conference when that happened back in the 80s. So,
Speak for yourself. I thought it was pretty fun.
yeah.
Also, that I wasn't it Texas A&M that gave him the Gold Trans Am, and he signed
It
with
was,
SMU
but
anyway.
we don't have to be accurate. We just have to be funny. That's the goal. No, Doak Walker joins Doak Campbell. But yeah, that swimming up in, see, I gotcha. There you go. Swimming will be interesting. They start midweek here, so keep an eye out for updates there.
Good stuff. Wrapping up, talking about some other news and notes from around the flats. Golf finished up at Linger Longer this past week. They finished fourth. Chris Lamprecht went 5 under par on Tuesday for his best round of the tournament. As a team, the 14th ranked Georgia Tech golf team was 2 under par in the final round for their fourth place finish. Hiroshi Tai fell off from his second place on Sunday when we spoke, and he finished in tied for 12th after a 3 over par day. Some good scores from around the team here. Carson Kim and Bartley Forrester, even 72s on Tuesday. Cale Fontenot didn't factor in, placed 4 over. Kim finished 22nd, Fontenot was 29th, and Forrester tied for 34th. Alabama was it was ranked 16th, by the way, and finished the tournament 40 under par. So Yeah, a pretty decisive victory, especially considering that the second place finisher, Virginia, was at 29 under par and the third place was at 26th. So a very
They
competitive
bring
field,
like
especially.
big fans to put behind them when they were play. Like I don't know. That's pretty good showing. I mean, you can't fake a 40 under par. So,
No, that's some good.
I just played today. I can't even imagine a team doing that. Never mind my four man scramble.
Anyways,
It's just ridiculous to look at on a board here. A couple of other local results from this tournament as well. Clemson finished sixth at +6, Kennesaw State at +10, Georgia State at +15. Mercer also at 12th with +29. So pretty competitive field at the top, especially, but not so much in terms of the competition for the competition straight up, considering that Alabama was up 11 strokes on the second place team. Club Lacrosse, our number 7 Club Lacrosse team, was off this past week. They'll be back in action at this weekend versus number 9 South Carolina. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us today. We'll end with some quick trivia from Tim.
Given that we've kept Kurt trapped here for 2 hours, it only makes sense to
Oh.
theme the question to him. We apologize, but also thank you for hanging out. We kind of talked
Oh,
off
it's a lot of
air
fun.
before. I was gonna say we talked off air before diving in about what the Kurt Hoyt era is, and so we've defined this as such: from '96 to present for women's basketball, '02 to present for volleyball, and 09 to 19 for Georgia Tech softball. So there's a period where we got three sports in the mix. There's a period where we got two, and there's a period where we got one. And my question to start is very simple. I want you to take a stab at what the win percentage is for those sports all in during those time periods.
Oh wow. So you got your database cranking over there. Is
Oh yeah.
that what you
Oh
did?
boy, it's yeah.
I'm gonna throw volleyball as above 500, I think, over that
Oh, that was
stretch.
easy.
By a lot.
Yeah, by
By a lot. Yes, they did pretty
They're all
well.
above 500, by the way,
They
if
had
that's
to
a fair
be.
hint.
Yeah, they got
Well,
it right.
there were some turning points there in basketball, and there were also some years in basketball, women's basketball, where the scheduling philosophy was very much to try to get enough wins prior to ACC time that you could get a few wins in the ACC and still end up right about 500, if not. So they're not quite as far above 500, probably a little closer to it over the stretch of many years, right? Getting close to 30. And softball, I still think softball is above 500, but it
Well,
may
see
be,
that.
but they're
Well,
between volleyball and women's basketball.
very
How's
critically, we've
that? Did
got
I rank them right?
Actually, basketball wound up at a 584 across that
Did they?
time period, which is the middle spot between volleyball at a 646 and
Yeah, it'd be the
softball at
same.
538, buoyed by your 823 that you got to enjoy in the first year at the Mew, when softball went 51-11.
Yeah, I was about
Oh
to say,
yeah,
like, you
what they
got
were that was that threw way
the
off
that year
those
being in
first
this
2
data set
years.
is very important here.
Well, once you get into the Gen Yi era, that skews everything because there will never, when I was doing softball online, it started out as video, or it started as audio and then started to have a video component to it. I tried to figure out how to work a Gen Yi reference in is essentially every game, because if folks for folks who didn't see her play, she was intentionally walked 4 times in an NCAA tournament game because people were so petrified, because she was the Barry Bonds of softball at that time, to where she was the and the problem with it is I think she scored 4 times in that game as well because they were trying to avoid her hitting a home run. right?
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
so they would intentionally walk her. I mean, this is like the very first batter. She hit leadoff. So the first batter or the bottom of the first inning is an intentional walk. And then, she'll steal second. She'll get the third on either a single or a ground out, somebody else is out, and then she'll score on the next play. And it's like she scored anyway. So it was like, which way do you want her to score? Do you want her to have to steal some bases and advance on other outs? Or do you want her just to go ahead and hit the home run? And so, I mean, she had an
Yeah.
on base percentage over 500,
No,
and
I
I'd never
check.
seen anyone like her, so far as softball, as someone who altered the game as much as Jen Yee did.
I was when
And
I.
she could field like crazy as well. Balls
I'm
never got
sure.
by her at second base.
I'm
And Jen
sure.
Cilio is really good out there now, but
Yeah.
sorry, Jen, but you're still not Jen Yee. But the Jen Yees in just kind of a different universe than the rest of us in softball.
When I talked to her for my I interviewed her about her time when she was with the Canadian Olympic team for the Beijing Games, I hadn't fully looked into her stats, and then I saw 2010. I'm like, that seems good, and then checked the NCAA record books, and I was like, oh, it's like she's still leading in everything after for almost everything 14 years later. Like, and that Barry Bonds analogy, like that's what I use when I try to explain it to friends. I'm like, we all saw Ronald do this, but imagine if Barry Bonds hit leadoff and still did everything, the numbers matched, and we're still just as good. It absolutely. My thought is, maybe you'll be able to elaborate. Is that the best single season performance of any Tech athlete? And
It's
the
one of them.
it's got to
And
be up
Barry
there.
Bonds hit leadoff when he was with the Pirates as a younger
That's
player.
true. That's true. Yeah. So
We
yeah.
should have had Kurt on for the Mount Rushmore episode.
Yeah, we should have done that. We should have
Oh,
done that.
man. Oh,
But that
we
was my
love
thing.
look.
That was
Yeah.
my thing in softball, was trying to figure out how to work in a Jen Yee reference at some point somewhere.
I believe
And
it.
I'm sure we'll see someone, because nothing, there's always someone better at some point in the future. So, but at the moment,
No
as far
one's
as
got her
softball
on,
is
no one's got
concerned,
her on
I mean, that
OPS.
she's, in my mind, she's number one. And we got a lot of really good softball players
Yeah.
that have come through our program, a lot of really good players and a lot of
Heck,
really smart
one's coaching the
players.
team right now too.
Well, yeah, I
Like,
mean, and
yeah.
Eileen was a terror on the base paths. I mean, no one wanted her on the base paths either. So,
Oh yeah. Yes, she was fast.
and so, I so want her to succeed.
Yeah.
I just, there, I want all of our coaches to succeed, but among the ones that you see, being an alum trying to come home and build this program, I so want her to get there. And I think she will. It's just a matter of how patient we're willing to be while she does.
I totally get that. I do want to round it out just because I have a couple other ones that I pulled out of here. 591 overall in that time across all the sports. So pretty
That's
good
pretty good.
average. Interestingly, so I don't have 2023, 2024 in this set because it ain't done yet. So we got some time left to go there. But interestingly, 21-22 was the third highest collective win percentage overall, of any of these individual years. Of course, 09, 2010, very, very high there.
Oh yeah.
And 02, 03 as well. So,
Oh yes. And during that era, amazingly enough, I mean, the women's athletics as a whole, women's
tennis too.
athletics was in a golden age at Georgia Tech, and we're getting back there. I mean, the fact that we got our first NCAA national championship out of women's tennis, and things like that. It's sort of the women's athletics at Tech are kind of, in some ways, this, undiscovered gem for
Oh,
Tech
yeah.
sports fans, if they really, to pay attention to and to support, because these are amazing young women. As a rule, they're all crazy smart. They're all the if you look and see where they are, the alumni, right, and where they are, where many of them are now, doctors and lawyers and business leaders and whatnot, they're worth the support from the Georgia Tech community, just as fellow tech people. And they all they're all great ambassadors for the Institute. And we've got great male athletes that are also great ambassadors for the Institute, but by and large, our women's athletes are just as students and people that are really good.
I've got one more that I
Oh
pulled out
boy.
of this. Do you have a guess? Who's the coach with the highest win percentage that you've called games for?
Oh, highest win percentage.
If it's not Eileen, I'll be shocked. I mean, not Eileen.
It's not, no.
Sorry, Michelli. If it's
Bond,
not,
well,
no. No?
Bond would be up there, but because Michelle is the longest tenured
Oh,
volleyball coach
those
for the
early years
Wisconsin.
were a little
But
rough. That's true.
yeah, so my first guess would be Bond had the best winning percentage over the time period that we overlapped, which was most of his career at Tech, but it was but those years were pretty good, and he had a couple years toward the end that were a little down, but he was solid winning 25 plus matches a year for 5, 6 years. So that's who I'll throw out there. How'd I do?
You hit it right on the head. Yeah, Bond was number one. I'm not going to say it's not particularly close, but Sharon Perkins at number two with
She was
it's a 729 for Bond and a 675 for Perkins. So
Sharon did a good job. And if I remember right, she's the one we took from Georgia, right? And so
think so,
I think when she came over, it was a little go, wait, we hired an assistant coach from Georgia at Georgia Tech, but it's like, well, that's happened before and it'll happen again. But I thought Sharon did a good job. And the trick with any mid-major coach moving up to a Power Five school is, can you get that Power Five talent? And can you both evaluate correctly and find that talent, then can you attract them? And we've seen in all kinds of sports, not just at Tech, at elsewhere, the ones that you're like, wow, I thought they would do better. And that's usually what happens, is they're not quite able to get to where they're bringing in the Power Five talent instead of the mid-major talent. And so but in Georgia, like when you know about softball, Georgia is just such a ripe field for recruiting softball players, and with the Hope Scholarship and all the other things that go on with that, it's like if you can keep that in-state pipeline going, and add to it the talent, good talent from out of state, you've got a recipe for success in that sport. We're starting to see better volleyball players come out of the state of Georgia. We've always had good basketball players coming out of the state of Georgia. So this is a good state for a lot of these things. I mean, all four of those recruits next year are local players, and I'm hoping in basketball that they're going to be successful, but they're local and they may bring more fans with them as well. So that's always more fun when
That'd
the
be really
room is a little
nice.
more full.
That'd be
Parents turn
nice.
out well. And they bring the energy. So I hadn't thought about that, but I like that. And to round things out, Michelli is at number three in terms of win percentage. And that would go up, including her 774 performance this year, because that certainly drives it up when you win 24 games out of 31. So
Well, and she'll eventually, and I assume she'll be around. I mean, she'll eventually set the wins records, and that she already has, I think, in the ACC. I think Shelton might still be out ahead of her in total wins, but she'll get there, and we'll look back on at some point with gratitude on what she did and is doing with that program.
For sure.
Well, I think that's a great place to leave our conversation. Thank you, Kurt, for joining us this evening. Where can the people find you?
Find me. You can find me on Twitter, Kurt in Atlanta. That's usually, if I'm on a social network, that's usually where you can find me. I probably, if I'm on a social network, it's mainly Twitter. And so that's probably the easiest place to find me online. Obviously, hopefully, it's my plan, but you never know, right? To be back again for volleyball in the fall. And try to keep some of these things going, do what I can to promote women's athletics and Georgia Tech athletics, and hopefully be a net positive for the programs that I'm connected to.
Yeah, and we truly appreciate your efforts to do so. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us today. Jake, where can the people find us?
Yes, as always, you can find us at fromtherumbleseat.com. You can email us at fromtherumbleseat@gmail.com. May not feel like summer's coming, but it is. We are doing our usual deep dives. So if you have any thoughts, opinions, things that you want us to explore, please let us know. We'll have the classics in there, but we do want to shape to, make sure we're talking about what you guys want to hear. And we'll do that week by week too. So feel free to drop us a line at that email. You can also find us at Twitter. At FTRS blog. I'm at Jake Grant 98. Jack is at Jack Nicholas. Don't look for Akshay, but you can find section 103 there as well. Section 103 .com and section 103 on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at From the Rumble Seat. You can find this podcast wherever fine podcasts are distributed. Like, review, tell your friends. We do appreciate it. That is what gets the word out about what we're doing here. And in the meantime, good night, good luck, and go Jackets.